Thank you very much. Hi, everyone. It's Drew Altman. Welcome. You should picture an incredibly messy room full of papers with immaculately dressed people as if we were doing, you were all here and we were doing a press conference. It's very strange, but welcome. Incredibly, this is the 16th year of this employer health benefits survey, and when you do a survey like this for as long as we've done it together with HRET, you have the ability to see trends emerge, and this year we're seeing two big trends continue: lower premium increases, very low, tied with 2010 for the lowest we've seen, and higher deductibles, especially for smaller employers. If you were, I was thinking that if you were a physician looking at the record of a patient that you've had for a very long time, you would say, I see two conditions here, lower premiums and higher deductibles. If I were a corporate CEO, I would say there may be a lot of debate about the ACA. I've heard a lot of things about the sky falling. There is a lot of change in the non-group market. But premiums and offer rates in the group market are remarkably stable. I have a lot of bigger problems to worry about than my company's health benefits, or for that matter, the ACA. But there is a lot more to say about what's in this year's study and this year's survey. With me is Malik Joshi, who's the president of HRET. We do this together every year. And of course, Gary Claxton, who's the lead researcher on this project, and Matthew Ray, who's a senior analyst at Kaiser, who works with Gary on the survey. And I'm going to invite Malik to offer his remarks, and then, as I do every year, I'll frame a little bit this year's study, and then turn this over to Gary and Matthew to review some of the findings, and we will take your questions. So, Malik, figuratively, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you very much, Drew. Good morning to everyone. As mentioned, I'm Malik Joshi, President of the Health Research and Educational Trust and Senior Vice President of Research at the American Hospital Association. And HRET is the research and education affiliate of the AHA, and we're just so pleased to be able to participate today in what Drew said is the 16th survey that we've conducted with the Kaiser Family Foundation. It's a pleasure to be part of such an important and really long-lasting survey, and when we're fortunate to have a consistent survey to look at trends, it helps us to understand progress and trends that are relevant to the healthcare field. I'm going to let my colleagues go into the depth of the findings today, but I thought they can provide the entree and I'll provide the appetizer. And any good appetizer, you want something just a little bit different. So I think I'm going to highlight a little bit around wellness, incentives, and health risk assessments, as they are clearly making an important dent in terms of the work that's going. Wellness, we know, is a critical cornerstone to good health and lower costs overall, especially as we talk more about population health, healthcare disparities, and, again, better care overall for all citizens. We know from this survey that since 2009, more firms, both large and small, are offering wellness programs. More are also offering incentives to encourage participation in health and wellness, and more firms are moving towards disease management programs, and again, health risk assessments is one example. So just to pull out some of the survey specifics around this, the first is around health risk assessments, HRAs, and health risk assessments ask about medical history, health status, lifestyle, and really provide an ongoing tracking and signal to individuals about their health risks. What we see is that 32% of all firms that offered health benefits, including 51% of large firms, provide employees with the opportunity to complete a health risk assessment. About half of large firms offering employees the opportunity of completing a health risk assessment provide a financial incentive to employees for doing so. When we talk about wellness programs, 74% of all firms, including 98% of large firms, offer at least one wellness program. And again, this highlights that employers are moving towards programs that raise the bar for everyone upstream in terms of health and not just health care. Programs may include smoking cessation efforts, nutritional education, weight loss programs, and many others, again, focused on health and wellness. The survey also points towards the benefits of using incentives to encourage employee participation. So not just wellness, not just health risk assessments, but incentives. which could lower premium costs or gift cards as examples. And so in fact, 12% of large firms offering a wellness program provide financial incentives to employees who complete their program. And of these, 32% offer a relatively large incentive of $500 or more. So those are just some of the highlights around wellness, around incentives and health risk assessments. Employers continuing the trend towards offering, encouraging, and activating employees in these efforts. Today's speakers, Gary and Matthew and Drew, will get much more into the details of the survey. And again, I just want to acknowledge the appreciation to work with the Kaiser Family Foundation, the research teams at HRAT and NORC at the University of Chicago for their continued outstanding work on this project. We look forward to continuing this work for the future. And again, I think this gives us a start for ongoing conversation on the cost of health insurance and how the dollars are being used in incentives towards health and wellness for everyone in America. With that, I will turn it back to you, Drew, and thank you very much.
Okay, Malik, thank you. Great. We will get back to wellness, too, in the Q&A, so don't go anywhere. And I guess now we transition then from the appetizer to the entree. So we are reporting an extraordinarily modest 3% increase for family policies in employer health insurance premiums this year. With about 150 million people in employer insurance, there are more than seven times as many people in the group market as the non-group market, which we have all focused on so much lately because of the ACA. So just a very basic thing to say is that what happens in the group market with 150 million people in it, employees and dependents, is just really important for employers and also for a lot of working people. We're also seeing premiums rise at about the same rate as inflation in the economy and wages. We've not seen that very often in the 16 years of this survey. It means that the pain level from rising premiums is a little lower than in the past, at least for this 1 year, but we'll talk about the long-term trends. I should say that the debate continues among experts about the reasons for the overall cost slowdown, how long it will last. I'm sure many of you have seen the op-eds and columns and studies that I and we have published on these issues as well as others, but the bottom line is that there is consensus that it's partly the result of the slow economy holding down utilization. It's partly the result of changes in health insurance and health delivery. There is, I would say, no agreement on how much of the slowdown is due to one or the other of those factors. And no one knows for sure if or when costs will begin to escalate more rapidly again. And the point I would add just for today is that is equally true when it comes to what will be happening to employer premiums in the future as well. So for my little framing today, and those of you who followed this survey in the past know I like to focus on the trends, I want to show you two charts just before I turn it over to Gary and Matthew. And these are the charts that are referred to as the introductory charts. In the materials, starting, of course, with the first one, which has kind of a long, wonky title, cumulative average premium increases for covered workers with family coverage, 3-5 year periods. It's my quintiles chart, or I also call it my something in the water lately chart. And it just shows you how the slowdown in healthcare costs in this market in general has been reflected in employer premiums. So if you look at the 5 year periods, increases fell from 72% from 1999 to 2004 to 34% from 2004 to 2009 to 26% from 2009 to 2014. So that's a pretty striking change. I won't rehash the debate about the economy versus the healthcare system. It's both. But you can see the direction, and it's pretty remarkable. And I think that, you know, anybody who tells you that they know if, when, or how rapidly premiums will start to increase more sharply again, or that they won't start to increase more sharply again, they don't know, or possibly they have a vested interest. You can see, though, that the picture is really one of, and this is an important theme that we will come back to for the survey this year, it really is what this chart shows you, one of pretty long-term moderation and stability in the group market in employer health insurance coverage, including since the passage of the ACA, when, you know, at least some predicted that the sky would fall, including for employer-based health insurance, and all kinds of bad things would happen. I really don't want to get into the middle of that, except to say that we don't see any evidence of it in the survey. The second chart is a theme that I write about a lot and talk about a lot. It's the one about deductibles, and it just shows you the steady growth in higher deductibles as insurance gradually changes from comprehensive coverage to skin in the game coverage. So you can see in the chart that the average deductible has doubled since 2007. It's now, across all firms, $1,200, but it's especially pronounced in smaller firms, where the average deductible is now $1,800, which is a very high deductible. And it just underscores how much insurance is changing, and we can come back and debate or discuss whether that's good or bad, and for whom. So that's a very, very high-level summary with a focus on trends. And we will now proceed to read you word for word each of the 14 chapters of the study. There's a lot more to say, and Gary and Matthew are going to hit some of the highlights of what always is a very, very rich study, and we will start with Gary.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Gary Claxton, a vice president here at the Foundation. This first slide shows the cumulative increases in premiums, workers' contributions, inflation, and workers' earnings since 1999, which is when we began doing this. As you can see, premiums and contributions have increased about 200% over the period, which is much, much more than inflation or earnings. And as you can see from the slide that Drew showed a minute ago, much of these increases happened during the early part of the 2000s, and more recent periods have shown slower growth. Next slide. This slide just shows the premium, the single premium and the family premium each year since we've been doing the survey. In 2014, the average single premium is $6,025 and the average family premium is $16,834. The estimate for the single premium in 2014 is about 2% more than 2013, but the two numbers are not statistically different. That's the first time we've seen this. The family premium in 2014 is about 3% higher than 2013. Premiums vary across a number of firm characteristics, and we show many, many of those in the report itself. This slide focuses on firm size. Premiums for both single and family coverage are higher in large firms. By large firms here, we mean, unless we say otherwise, we mean firms with 200 or more workers, than they are in small firms. For worker contributions, workers in large firms contribute more on average than workers in small firms for single coverage, and that's because there's a pretty large share of workers in small firms that have zero contributions. But workers in small firms contribute much more on average for family coverage than workers in large firms. One of the comparisons we do and one of the sort of firm characteristics we look at are firms that have concentrations of lower wage workers and higher wage workers. By lower wage, we mean a firm where at least 35% of the workers earn $23,000 per year or less. And by higher wage, we mean a firm where at least 35% of the workers earn $57,000 per year or more. Those amounts were picked because they represent the 25th and the 75th percentiles of the national wage distribution. What we see is that the average premiums for single coverage and family coverage are much lower in firms with many low-wage workers than they are in the higher-wage firms, and that's very likely related to the generosity of the benefits in those firms and to the cost sharing, which is probably higher in those firms. When we look at what workers contribute for family coverage, on average, the required dollar contributions in firms with many low-wage workers is much higher, almost $2,000 higher, than the required contribution in firms with higher-wage workers, even though the premiums in those firms with low-wage workers are much lower. So what you see is that firms that have a lot of low-wage workers, when they offer when they offer family coverage, have very high family contributions that are probably very difficult for people to afford. Each year we calculate sort of on a firm-by-firm basis the average share that the worker has to pay towards the cost of single and family coverage. This year it's 18% for single coverage and 29% for family coverage, which is similar to what we've seen in recent years. But this slide shows that while the average has been pretty stable, and we often focus on averages, there's actually a great deal of variation around the average. This slide shows the variation in worker contribution percentages for family coverage, and it's a percentile distribution. And you can see differences at both, and this shows small and large firms, and there's differences at both ends. 14% of covered workers in small firms have no contribution for single coverage, compared to only 2% of covered workers in large firms. At the other end, and this is where affordability becomes something of an issue, 31% of covered workers in small firms must contribute more than half the premium, compared to only 9% of workers in large firms. I'm going to turn now to offer rates. This is the percentage of firms that are offering health benefits. 55% of employers with three or more employees offer health coverage in 2014, which is similar to the last few years. The offer rate is driven largely by the very small firms, the 3 to 9 firms. While they employ less than 10% of the workers, more than 60% of all employers have 3 to 9 employees. So they really dominate the offer rate. What you can see is 44% of firms with 3 to 9 employees offer coverage, which is, again, similar to the last few years. Once you get to firm, the next slide shows that once you get to firms with at least 50 workers, the vast majority of firms offer health benefits to at least some of their workers, including 90% of firms with 50 to 99 workers and 94% of firms with 100 or more workers. Along with the, this next slide shows that along with the offer rate, the coverage rate also was stable last year. In firms offering health benefits, on average 77% of the workers were eligible for coverage and 62% enrolled in coverage at the firm. Those are both similar to recent years. This next slide shows some new things we started to collect. There were some stories last year about employers altering their practices around offering coverage to spouses. And we know that the employer responsibility requirement under the ACA, which begins to take effect next year, will require some large employers to offer coverage to employees and dependent children, but not to spouses, or face a penalty. So we added some questions this year to learn more about the current practices of offering coverage to spouses and dependents and to allow us to see how things might change over the next several years. What we found is that virtually all firms offering benefits offer both single and family coverage. Just 4% of small firms reported offering only single coverage. Virtually all firms offer coverage to spouses of employees, and almost as many offer coverage to other dependents, such as children. We also asked some questions about offering coverage to same-sex and opposite-sex domestic partners, and those percentages are shown here also, and they're similar to what we have found in the past. The last chart I'm going to present shows that it's sort of related to the last slide on on spouses, in that it shows how employers vary contribution and eligibility for various reasons, including other coverage opportunities. The left-hand part of the slide shows that 9% of all firms, including 18% of large firms, provide employees with additional compensation if they decide not to participate in the health plan. Slight variant on that is that 7% of firms offering benefits, including 14% of large firms, offer some sort of additional compensation if the employee enrolls in their spouse's plan. And then on the right side of the chart, 9% of firms where spouses generally are offered coverage restrict eligibility to the spouse if he or she is offered coverage at their own place of work or in another place. And 5% charge a higher contribution to the spouse if the spouse is offered coverage elsewhere. Now we're going to turn to Matthew for the rest of the slides.
This is Matthew Ray with the Kaiser Family Foundation. In 2014, three quarters of covered workers faced a waiting period before they can enroll in health benefits. Starting on January 1st, 2014, the ACA requires that non-grandfathered plans beginning the new plan year are required to have a waiting period of less than 90 days or less. Almost a quarter, 23% of large firms with a waiting period indicated that they decreased the length of their waiting period during the last year. The percent of covered workers enrolled in either an HSA-qualified health plan or a high-deductible health plan associated with a health reimbursement arrangement is the same as last year, 20%. Enrollment in these high-deductible health plans with savings options has plateaued in recent years compared to a period of growth in 2010 and 2009. Returning to the issue of deductibles, which Drew touched on, 18% of covered workers are now enrolled in a plan with a deductible of $2,000 or more, what we consider to be a high deductible level. There are important differences in the percentage of covered workers enrolled in these higher deductible plans. More than a third of covered workers at small firms offering health benefits have a deductible of $2,000 or more, compared to 11% of covered workers at larger firms. Deductibles of $1,000 or more have become commonplace for covered workers at small firms. 61% of covered workers at these firms face a deductible of $1,000 or more. An out-of-pocket limit is a maximum amount that a plan enrollee must pay in cost sharing each year. The ACA requires that non-grandfathered health plans with a plan year starting in 2014 have an out-of-pocket maximum of $6,350 or less for single coverage and $12,700 for family coverage. In 2014, 94% of covered workers have an out-of-pocket maximum for single coverage, significantly more than 88% in 2013. Now, only 7% of covered workers are either enrolled in a plan without an out-of-pocket limit or a limit that exceeds the $6,350 benchmark, significantly less than 14% last year. Plans grandfathered under the ACA are exempt from several requirements of the law. The percentage of covered workers enrolled in a grandfathered health plan decreased to 26% in 2014, less than 36% last year. Similarly, the percentage of offering firms that have at least one health plan that is grandfathered has decreased to 37%. The difference in the percentage of covered workers enrolled in grandfathered plans is similar between small and large firms. Turning to retiree coverage, in 2014, 25% of large employers, as Gary said, 200 or more workers, offering health benefits offered retiree coverage to at least some of their former employees, which is similar to what we saw last year. Amongst that population, amongst those firms that offer retiree coverage, large firms, a quarter of them said they are considering changes to the way that they offer retiree benefits because of the new state and federally sponsored health insurance marketplaces. Some retirees may be eligible for premium tax credits for coverage provided through a marketplace. In 2014, 61% of covered workers are enrolled in a self-funded plan, the same percentage as last year. In a self-funded plan, the plan sponsor pays for most or all of the claims instead of purchasing insurance coverage. Self-insuring is much more common among covered workers at large firms than small firms. Over time, the percentage of covered workers at large firms enrolled in self-funded plans has gradually increased. The percentage of covered workers at small firms enrolled in self-funded plans is similar to last year. This is important because some provisions of the ACA do not apply to self-funded plans. For example, requirements that the insurers use community rating standards to set premiums. As Dr. Joshi touched on, virtually all large employers offer one of these wellness programs. Again, as Dr. Joshi touched on earlier, some employers are beginning to use incentives to encourage health promotion programs and wellness programs. One additional finding that kind of benchmarks with our appetizer is how employers feel about the incentive they are offering. So among employers with incentives to employees who participate in their wellness programs, 33% of large employers and 12% of small employers characterize these incentives as very effective at increasing participation. Some employers have implemented changes to their provider networks to influence either the quality and or cost of the plans they offer. The largest plan at 18% of large firms offering health benefits has a high performance or tiered network. These plans group providers within the network based upon quality and or cost metrics. 12% of large firms offering health benefits offer a narrow network plan. That is a plan which limits the number of providers you can participate to reduce cost. These plans have networks which are more restrictive than a standard PPO network. 8% of large firms have a narrow network plan. So our final slide is on private exchanges. A private exchange is one created by a consulting company or insurer or benefit consultant, not by either a federal or state government. There are a range of models developing, but at the essence, private exchanges allow employees to choose from several health benefit options offered on the exchange. 13% of large firms offering health benefits are considering offering benefits through a private exchange. Currently, 3% of covered workers are enrolled in benefits through such an exchange.
And if I could add a plug, we should have a report coming out on some of the private exchanges and how they're operating fairly soon. So you'll obviously become aware of that as well.
Okay. Let me thank Moloch and HRET. It is a great partnership which continues. And thank you all for joining us. And we'll see you next year for next year's survey.